Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Good morning, fellas. How you feeling this morning?
Good. Not bad at all. Just, another day in paradise, as they say.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different paradise this morning, to be sure, than we've seen the last couple of days. Another night with unrest, another night with protests, another night where, you know, I think most of us were probably glued to the television for most of last night and seeing all the different videos that have been going on. LZ, I'll be honest, the video that you sent to the group when you were on the freeway traveling back into the city with all of the armored vehicles on the freeway, just some of the images that we're seeing, just even though we've been seeing them now for a few days, they just never get any easier to look at.
Well, I've never reported from a global war zone before. And as you know, you guys know, and the listeners know, I've been in the midst of, you know, uprising, protests, looting for years as a reporter. And even before that, just as a citizen. Last night was weird. Last night was really weird for me. I don't want to get too political, but it started with the message from the president, one that normally isn't one that you hear in moments like this. You don't normally hear the president speak about protesters or see them being dispersed when they're being peaceful in front of the White House like that. And so it was like a weird tone. And to be driving home, I spent the day, a good chunk of the day with Coach Anthony Land for a piece that's running in today's LA Times. And we'll talk a little bit about our conversation. But on the way back from his home, that's when I encountered the rows and rows of armored vehicles. And when I peeked inside, I saw them and they're staring at me and they all got the guns. And it was a very intimidating, uneasy feeling. Knowing that they weren't necessarily, you know, police officers that could pull me over and harass me, but certainly you don't feel as if you're the one in control as a citizen when you're on the road and you see that kind of imagery. Then I get closer to my home, and that's when I realize that the convention center is the ground base for everything. Mm-hmm. And as you guys know, I live very close to the convention center. So now, all of a sudden, did I not just ride back to the city with this image? It's literally in my lap. You know, I'm seeing people get arrested everywhere. The helicopters are everywhere above. There's armored vehicles riding right by my apartment building. And not just one or two or three. I'm talking like 10, 11, 12 armored vehicles completely filled with soldiers. And you're asking yourself, are we under occupation? Are we in a police state? What is going on here? What is happening? And more importantly, from my perspective, why is the response to protest so gung-ho and filled with vigilance and we using the full force of the federal government? But the actions that spark these protests continue to be met with lip service, cute little posts on Facebook, and statements that don't include the word race. So it feels like a normal case of America always making sure resources are available for the cure and giving lip service to the prevention. You know, it's like going to the gym. It's cheaper to go to the gym and work out than it is to deal with the ramifications of being sick and unhealthy. Nonetheless, we're a very sick and unhealthy country. And that's just the way I feel about this conversation about race and criminal justice reform. A lot of resources on the back end, still slothful in terms of addressing the front end.
Well, before I even get started with my day on our radio show in the morning, I want to issue an apology. Yesterday, I was on Mason and Ireland's afternoon drive, and I was addressing the USC booster Marlo Brown, who is the former lawyer of the L.A. Police Department Union. And she spoke about having the protesters shot. And while I was on air having that conversation with Mason in Ireland and it was brought up, I said that she should be shot, too. And I apologize for that, but I got caught up in the moment of frustration of just hearing people continue to try and blame the protesters and try and find ways out. So it got to me in the heat of the moment. So I apologize to Marla Brown and her family for even using those words, because, again, I'm not an individual that would even remotely close to provoking violence. Even that's not even something. But when I'm caught up in the moment, I'm hearing that someone is saying such a thing. My first reaction was those words, because I'm hearing it. So I want to apologize, and hopefully they accept my apology, and I'm moving on from here.
Yeah, Key, I mean, I certainly appreciate the apology, but what Marla Brown said and did, I think most people probably know, but like you said, she was an LAPD union attorney, or at least at one point she was. She was a USC football booster, identified as such. USC reacted quickly. When she said what she said and wrote what she wrote, Mike Bone issued a statement saying that, no, we're not doing this. The abhorrent and blatantly racist tweets from an individual who identified as a USC booster, they removed her season tickets, they refunded her money, and they said, no, get the hell out of here. I guess, and you guys tell me what you think, that maybe, maybe one of the parts of the residue of all of this is that when there is, because we've seen it a million times before, when somebody says something like that, it's like, well, let's wait and see, let's investigate, let's do this, as opposed to, no, we don't want any part of that. You get out of here. Let's move on. You're done. I thought USC reacted to that in exactly the way that you hoped that they would.
No, they did their part. I mean, USC smart enough to know they're sitting right in South Central Los Angeles. They're right in the heart of an urban area, and they've been supportive of that urban area for as long as I can remember. That was one of the main reasons that me and my family has always been attached to USC, because it grew up in our back. We grew up in that backyard, and students lived on our streets, lived in our apartment buildings. My mom, and once upon a time, managed a apartment building that was full of students. So it's kind of, I get it, I understand it. It's just people. I guess for me, when I'm hearing things like that, and I'm sure Mike Bone and Carol Folts and whoever else that are the powers that be that don't condone such behavior, when they first heard it, their reactions was such that, we can't, this is not acceptable for us. We can't have that. And that's the same reaction that I'm sure most people would trigger when you're hearing someone saying those sort of things. And whether it was unjust or whether it was just something that was at the top of their head because they were mad at the situation and they've worked with the police department before and they're close to the police department, obviously it wasn't supposed to be said publicly. And
what was her job again?
She was an attorney.
What did she do?
She was an attorney.
Her Twitter bio said she was identified as an LAPD union attorney. She later clarified that she had not held that job in some time.
So she was a former LAPD attorney.
Just think about that for a second. Even if she were to get caught up in that, right? Just think about the mentality that it takes to get to that point, to say those words. And what was her job again? So people ask, how do we get here? Well, there's an example of how we got there, right there. When I saw that story, I didn't realize you had said that. I'm glad you apologized. But when I first heard the story, saw what was said, and then realized what her relationship with the police union was, I was like, there's a couple of versions in which you can accept this reality. There's the version in which, up until this point, she's never harbored any ill will towards citizens that, she didn't agree with. And this is just a one-off that would never happen before and should never happen again. That's one version. There's another version in which she's always held these thoughts. She's always kept them to herself, but they've always guided what she did when she was working for the police union. And then there's the third, which is perhaps the most disturbing. She's had these thoughts. She shared these thoughts. And she's been able to continue to go about her day and her life, not just operating on any level, But when you're a USC booster and you're working for the police union, you're on a higher tier on the socioeconomic ladder. And if you have these thoughts and you're sharing these thoughts and no one around you is challenging you or pruning you, but you're not only allowed to grow and be healthy, perhaps you're even spreading these thoughts. Now we're really getting to some very uncomfortable space, but perhaps it's an uncomfortable space that reveals a greater truth, which is we're on a hamster wheel because people like that have been allowed to function so long unchecked by good people who hear things that are disturbing, may even see things that are disturbing, but don't feel that they can do anything. So I'm really glad to see that USC stepped up. I'm glad that she's been exposed. But I really hope whoever's in her inner circle say, hey, what was that about? Challenge her on that. Challenge. Because just simply saying you got kicked out of USC, that's good for the campus, and that sends a message. But what we really need is a change.
Well, you look at USC's response, and you look at some of the responses that we heard yesterday, and we'll hear some more of them today. I mean, I know that we listened to the head coach of the Colts yesterday, Frank Reich, issue his statement on the back of what the Colts themselves had said. And look, it's not perfect, but it does feel like these responses are far more immediate and far more pointed. Like you mentioned yesterday, LZ, that the NFL's response was kind of blunt, or you know, it was not pointed. It did not mention the things that caused us to be in this position in the first place, racism and police brutality and these sorts of things. Those were not mentioned, whereas USC said, oh, hell no, we're not doing that. Frank Reich and another of other guys inside and around the sports world are saying, no, we're not doing this. This is unacceptable. This is why we are where we are. It has been refreshing to see some reactions, some very pointed reactions that typically we do not. Usually they're very measured responses, and these responses, at least a number of them, are not measured. They're very, very pointed, and that's encouraging to see.
It always is encouraging to see. But, you know, you again, when you're talking about the NFL or you're talking about some major components of corporate America that tries to play both sides, they're not going to take a stand other than giving you a generic answer to the question that we pose. They're just not going to do it. Because they've never done it. So why should we expect for them to do it all of a sudden? They're not going to, you know, there's certain networks, there's certain movie companies, there's certain internet companies. They're going to keep it right down the middle. They're not going to sway too far to the left, too far to the right. They're going to keep it right down the middle because what they're not trying to do is affect their bottom line. And what they get afraid of is saying something that will alter their bottom line no matter where we are in America. We've seen it far too many times because this is not the first time that something like this has come up. Mm-hmm. It may have not been riots. It may have been murders. It may have been simply a Kaepernick kneeling down where people are going to stay right in the middle because they don't want to, you know, it's like, no, I'm not going to do that because people are going to stop wanting to look at us. People are going to want to stop buying our product. They're just going to stay right down the line.
All right, more athletes are speaking out. We'll hear from a variety of them coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. So, Key, with in mind what you said a minute ago, fast forward a month, 6 months, a year. Are we back where we were 6 months ago, a year ago? Is it the same? Is this just lip service that we're hearing from these leagues, from these teams? Or do you think that we might see some change? Do you think we might see more activism from not just the communities, but from the teams themselves being involved in issues?
Absolutely. You're going to see change. And it won't be alarming change. It's not going to be severe. It's not going to be overnight. It's not going to be all of a sudden from 0 to 60, right? I mean, but you're going to see – you're going to see small doses of change here and there. I mean, people are who people are. You're going to see the guys that stepped up. You know, you're going to see the Mr. Crafts step up even more. You're going to see Stephen Ross step up even more. You're going to see, the Lakers step up even more. You're going to see the Clippers step up even more. You're going to see those sort of the Golden State Warriors. You're going to see those organizations that have always done something. You're going to see the NBA step up even more. But when it comes to those leagues like the NFL, you're going to see them take a baby step. You're going to see them take, but they're not trying to dive in head first into the ocean. They're not going to do that, no matter what's going on. They're just not going to do it. And you know,
because
you
say, well, they don't want to, Key, because they're afraid of alienating part of their customer base. Why not? Because it seems that if you're going to do it, now is the time to do it.
All of the above. All of the above. I mean, you got to think, though, when you've thought a certain way your entire life and you've been trained a certain way, no matter what it is, you're not going to all of a sudden hit a switch and then be a light, right, and come on. You're going to gradually, you know, become something, and you're gradually going to – you don't go from multiplication to trigonometry. You get there, and I think that the NFL is a get-there league. They're not a – bam, we're going to go there now. I mean, think about – just think about everything that they've done that you can remember. I don't care if it's from a domestic violence standpoint. I don't care if it's from the Kaepernick standpoint. They're going to eventually, you know, get to a place where they're like, okay, we're comfortable doing this. Because when you got 32 owners and 32 teams and 32 brains, everybody ain't going to be on the same page, man. They just not. Because there's going to be people that say, no, I don't believe in that. And there's going to be guys that say, come on, guys, how could you not believe in it? And they're going to be blind to it. I mean, it's just what it is. So will there be some changes? Small changes. And there again, and that goes for sports leagues and non-sports leagues. There's just going to be small changes. It's not going to be severe. It's not going to be severe at all. We're going to still continue to fight through everything that we're fighting through today.
In my conversations with Coach Lynn yesterday, I share with him an analogy that I share with the readers, the listeners yesterday, and I'm going to share again. If you are thirsty and someone pours you a glass of water, you're going to drink the water because you're thirsty and it quenches your thirst. But if you're thirsty and someone spits in your glass of water, you're likely not going to want to drink that water, because it's contaminated. It's disgusting. Someone just spat in it. That's what playing both sides looks like. You can do all the good things in the world as a league, as an owner, but if you tolerate racism, you're spitting in my glass of water. Now, if I'm dying of thirst, I might still drink it, but I know what you've done to me. I recognize what has just happened. You're dehumanizing me because I'm in this desperate position. When you play both sides and you're a person of great resource, you're not really helping the side that's in dire need. You're disrespecting us. And I'm just going to keep it real. These owners, regardless of sports, that, you know, feel one way in terms of their conscience, but maybe operate in the other way as well because they like some of maybe the financial benefits of taxes, or they can get access to things, or they can get land that they want to build stadiums, or whatever the motivation is to want to appease racist people, whatever the motivation is, I recognize what it is, but please note, you're an associate, you're not a friend. None of us would accept friends who are actively trying to destroy us. None of us would accept that person as a friend. You may have to work with this person. They may be a colleague. They may be an associate. But I'd be damned if you call them a friend when you know that they're helping you in one fight and then they're stabbing you in the back at the same damn time. So I understand, you know, the reasons why. I'm a smart guy. I've been around. I understand how wealth works in this nation. I totally get it. But please know that if you're one of those people that like to play both sides, there's one side that's fighting for life. Literally, stop killing us. And then there's a side that's like, well... So what exactly about the well side that makes you feel good? If one side is saying we want to be equal, if one side is saying all men are created equal, love is love, treat each other the way you want to be treated, what exactly about that other side that appeals to your humanity?
See,
that
makes
you feel all right?
I break it down a lot of different ways, like a LZ would, but I also look at things like regions, region of the country, you know, where's those teams located versus corporate America versus television networks. When you have an owner like a Steve Ballmer, I don't know what he got. He got $600 billion or some crazy mad money, right? He doesn't – he's his own entity. So he doesn't need to appease anybody. So if at the end of the day, if he decided I'm going to deal with the racist people, which he's not, but if he'd made that decision, that's the way I'm going, ain't nothing you can do to him, right? It's like, okay, well, you don't ever have to come to my stadium. It doesn't matter. I got $600 billion, so it doesn't matter. But he goes the other way because you can't do nothing to him, and it doesn't matter. You got the Golden State Warriors. They're in an area, they're in a state, in an area in Northern California, that's their mindset is to help the situation because they see it every single day in Oakland and in San Francisco and in North Oakland Raiders, saying, well, in Las Vegas Raiders now, but they're in that part of the region where the Seattle Seahawks, they're in that region where their mindsets are totally different. Now you go to some other regions, you know, you sit there and you go, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I see what that is.
But Key, what about those spots in those other regions where you, like you just said, yeah, okay, I know what that is. What's the response? So do you not go? Do you not turn on the television? Do you not support? How do you respond to their decision?
For them, they stay out of the way.
Get lost.
They stay out of the way. And you say, well, how do – because the people in those regions that are supporting those teams, their mindsets is like the team owners. They already got the mindset, so it doesn't offend them. They will tell you that they understand why he is playing both sides of the equation. That's just what it is.
And that's the spit in the glass, right? I mean, yeah. That's the okay. Yeah. There it is. I guess I'm just going to live with it and keep it moving. Or do you have to say, you know what? No. Maybe I'm in that part of the country. Maybe I am looking at it and saying, I want some change. I don't want this to happen anymore. But the owner of my team is just trying to stay in the middle of the road and not picking a side.
But remember, you
maybe you
never,
do have to say, I'm not supporting that guy.
You want apple in the basket, dog. As soon as your seat is up, somebody else is going to get it. As soon as you relinquish your rights to those season tickets, they're going to put them up for sale and somebody else is going to buy them that is aligned with that. Am I wrong?
No, you're probably not wrong, but that doesn't mean that you still can't make that decision. That doesn't mean about the decision.
No, you can make the decision. My point in saying that is it doesn't matter to that particular owner because that particular owner going to fill that seat regardless to the way you think. See, when you had Donald Sterling in L.A., and Donald Sterling was a major racist, once that became majorly public, people was not going to sit in those seats, and the league wasn't going to have that. But as long as he was quiet and wasn't majorly publicized, then at the end of the day, whatever people were sitting in those seats didn't know who he was buying those tickets and going to the games and enjoying them. But once people realized that this dude is a racist, we can shut this whole league down. The league wasn't going to have it. They had to get him up out of there.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, we'll hear from somebody that has been involved in issues like this going back decades and decades. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was on SportsCenter last night. Some very thoughtful comments from the captain. That is coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
You know, Key, I'm sitting here watching television in my home, doing the show, watching the news right now. And it's interesting to see because last night on the news and then even this morning on the news, there seems to be more coming out. Look, I'm looking at it right now. There's more pictures of guys looting and destroying things. But there's also been a lot of pictures about people doing the right thing, about the peaceful protests. I mean, LeBron pointed that out yesterday. Where's the coverage of all these wonderful protests that are taking place and not people burning things and smashing windows? It does feel, and maybe it's small, but it does feel like we've seen a little bit more of the needle swinging back to the middle of showing the protests as much as we are the destruction.
Yeah, and I spoke to that yesterday as well about, showing and focusing in on the protest and, having people really understand what this really means and what people are doing that's better than what people are trying to say is going on. You go back to the Colorado image of all those beautiful people just laying around and protesting. Those are the things that should be talked about. But I also understand that from a journalist standpoint that there's a section that they must cover, they can't ignore, but you don't have to spend too much time on it. Split the screens in half. Show one side this way, one side that way. Talk about it that way. Don't just focus in on the National Guards rolling in to Santa Monica and making it seem like this is we're in the middle of Beirut or something. I don't that those are the wrong images to project. I mean, when you look at the newspapers, the front covers of these newspapers or the front covers of things that are on the internet, instead of showing the protests, you rather show dudes standing on top of a car when it's burning down because that is a great photo to show. Like, it's not, but that's just where we're at. I mean, it sells, it's sexy, it's cute, and they like that sort of stuff because the protest and peaceful protest of the Flint, Michigan sheriff walking down the streets. See, everybody, the way that I look at it, the Flint, Michigan sheriff, I saw that 3 days ago, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Then 2 days later, you got other officers and cops kneeling down. I'm like, come on, man. That is so insincere that I can't. I just can't. I was telling my wife, I said, I can't. And my wife is white. My wife is pasty white, okay?
She ain't that pasty. Well, she got a little color.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
She'll tell you in a heartbeat she don't get out like that. But it's one of those deals where now the I don't even know the sheriff's name in Flint, Michigan. But when I first saw that image of him, I said he got it. Whether he's sincere or not, he got it. He got it. But I could just tell by his swag, he's a cool sheriff. He like, I got this job to help people out and make money. I ain't got this job to try to show flex my muscles on the negative power side. I'm trying to show it on the positive power side. And I can tell just based on his haircut alone, his swag. Like he was, no, I'm serious, LZ. I don't know how much you paid attention to him since you were from that area, but I don't know if you really been watching him. Man, that dude, like I rock with dude. And then all of a sudden, you see all these other dudes.
Why is it insincere if the next person does it? If it quells some tension, if it brings the level of
you and your
tension down.
Just, you and your officers just billy clubbing people 2 days ago. You only doing it to bring the level of attention down. Because if that brother never did that and you never saw that, you wouldn't go never do what you did. Come on now. Travis, you're smarter than this.
The thing that's interesting is that, well, one, there are people, and I'm going to include myself in that, who are trying to use that platform to show the protest. Now, we are doing that. Two, the only way you know that there are peaceful protests going on if you're not in the street is because the media has shown you that. So I understand what LeBron James is coming from, but you can't tweet out clips of the media showing you peaceful protests and then say, why isn't the media showing this? You're literally retweeting the media showing this. So I'm just going to push back a little bit on this notion that, the entire coverage of this thing has been slanted in one way. You may remember the imagery, which is why a lot of elements of the media like to focus in on the elements of the imagery. But there are other people, other companies, other networks that are showing the protests that are talking about that issue.
And that's true. Got to call you Raj because Raj is letting us know that one of you need WD-40 in that wooden rocking chair that y'all have.
Who's that?
It's got to be Travis.
The chair might be
every
me.
Time.
My every radio time. Is not on, but it might be my chair.
Yeah, it's got to be your chair. You need to get some WD-40.
But, well, you don't put WD-40 on wood, but that's another issue. Go
you
ahead.
Need to try.
No, yeah, you need to try on the metal part at least. It's true what you are saying, LZ, but having been sitting in this house for the last week on a television show, I mean, watching television nonstop, once the rioting started and the looting started, it's almost from 2 down to 4 to 5 to 7 to 9, 11, 202, you name it, that's what the focus has been. It never has gone back to the protest. It's been a clip. But the main focus, so if you took 60 minutes in an hour and you say, well, how long have they been showing this? Man, you break it down.
Well, Key, I can tell you this. I was watching the news last night, and without exception, whether it was a national news broadcast or whether it was a local news broadcast, the vast majority of it, I would say, you know, if we're talking about a 30-minute news program, I'd say the first 25 minutes were of all of the rioting and the destruction and the fires and the broken glass. And then the last 5 minutes, it's, oh, hey, look, there's some good news, too. And they're showing a picture of one of the officers kneeling, or they're showing a picture of, like, that woman in Van Nuys last night who saved that one store. That there are good stories out there, but they're kind of shoehorned in at the back end of these things, as opposed to, hey, this is going on and this is going on. It doesn't feel like it's even-handed. It feels like it's tilted one way.
It's getting buried, and that's why when LZ posted his social media LA Times story, I made sure to put it up on my social media platforms so that the people can see that this is what LZ's doing, even though he looks goofy in that helmet, but this is what LZ's out on the streets actually doing and showing you that there's people that are actually genuinely, like, a guy came all the way from Nebraska. Like, seriously, like, he could have did the same things in Nebraska, but he decided to come to Los Angeles and do it. So it goes to show you that there are good people out there, but because the news media is so large on television that most of us run toward our TVs, the only time we look at our phones is when we look in to see some dirt. We're not really looking for good stuff on our phones.
All right, we'll come back. We're going to hear from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He was on SportsCenter last night talking about whether or not there's hope in the future, whether or not this can bring some attention and generate some change. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. And continue our conversation about what's going on here in L.A., what's going on across the country. And LZ, I know that you got a chance to speak with Anthony and Lynn. I want to get into that before too long as well. But I want you guys to listen to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was on SportsCenter last night with Scott Van Pelt and was asked whether or not he sees some hope now that people, or maybe some more people, are opening their eyes to a problem that's been right in front of us for a very long time.
Oh, absolutely. Just the fact that people are acknowledging what has been going on for 400 years. Black lives have not been valued. We got to change that. Equal treatment under law will work if certain police institutions have to change their attitude and their culture and deal with people in a way that de-escalates tension and the things that cause violent incidents. We have to learn how to de-escalate these situations and enforce the law the way it should be enforced.
Well, the cap is 100% right. You know, I think that there's going to be small changes and as I said on Mason Ireland yesterday, and I said on our show, and I've been saying pretty much the entire time, is we didn't see this in 65. We didn't see this in 92. This is different now in 2020. You have people aligned with us that was afraid to even align themselves with us just a little bit. Now, you know, you go back to the 1992 riots, and we was destroying our own areas in our own neighborhoods. But remember, those were all black neighborhoods, Hispanic neighborhoods, where we would shop, where we would frequent. But since you got a different culture, you got different ethnicities, you have all of those sort of things rolling with us now, we are now in other areas and by being in other areas, because those people that are with us or bringing us to those areas, it's a little bit different. That goes to show you they with us now. They hear us a little bit more. You got states, Utahs and Colorados, they with us now. In 1992, guess the only place was burning was South L.A., Long Beach, and that's pretty much it. Compton, that's pretty much it. You know, they cut you off when you cross the 10 freeway. They put a barrier up. You wasn't getting nowhere near La Cienega and Pico. But because we got a different profile now, we're going into Santa Monica. We were protesting into Beverly Hills, protesting on the Grove, protesting on Melrose. I mean, protesting prior to.
How does that change the police departments? I mean, I get that. I get that people are outraged. But how does that ultimately wind up with different styles of policing?
Because some of those people that's protesting with us may have an in with some of the people that are in the police department. That are in the commission. And when you seeing all of this, you hearing all of this, you can't help but to change to some degree. You know, you got a different leadership at the mayor's office. You got a different leadership at the chief of police here in Los Angeles. There's different thought processes. You know, you had Chief Daryl Gates, you remember him? Come
sure.
on, man. He was a police in the morning and probably a white cloth over the head dude at night. Even though he was that way in the daytime too, you just didn't see it. You saw it, but you didn't see what he was wearing. You don't have that now.
Well, you do. You still have it. In fact,
no, I'm talking about more so at the top. I'm talking about at the top of what we dealing with in the from a political standpoint here in Los Angeles at the top.
Well, we know a couple of things. We know that the FBI did a report and laid out how and what estimated percentage white supremacists and the KKK had infiltrated law enforcement around this country. This isn't me throwing out conspiracy theories. The FBI released a report laying out how and where they think the KKK and white supremacists had infiltrated the nation's law enforcement. And there had been stories, and I've written some, in which the Justice Department had to go in and bust up police departments because they had chiefs, sheriffs, who are grand poobahs or whatever the hell they're called, on the KKK with the robes and a whole nine. In our lifetime, while I'm a journalist, recently, and when you know that, and this is the reason why I have a hard time with, you know, we talked about in the last segment, these both sides people. We're running out of time for both sides, because the side that's pushing for these laws that are not necessarily enforcing laws the way the just laws the way they need to be, they're not waiting. They're not playing both sides. They're very clear on what their mission is. So we need to be diligent and clear on what our mission is. There is an element within our police force, according to the FBI, that hates black people, that hates Latinos, that hates gay people, that hates Jewish people. And they have badges, and they have authority, and they have the benefit of the doubt. And some of them are going out there enacting their own brand of vigilante justice. And we need to be diligent in calling that out from the top down. And so our allies and people who don't agree with that in the sports world, They need to be aware of that information, that when you say you're trying to appease both sides, this is what the other side has going on.
This is the fear, right? That what we're going through right now doesn't change anything. that what went what you mentioned, Key, back in 1992, and maybe it was confined to just Southern California and certain parts of Southern California, and it didn't spread across the country like this has. But we've seen we've seen unrest, we've seen rioting, we've seen this happen in different parts of this country at different parts in our history, and yet here we are again. And this is the part that we can talk about this, and we can say this needs to happen and that needs to happen. But the fact of the matter is, I feel like this conversation has been had many, many times before in many places, haven't happened again. And and I don't know why this one will be different. I know it's bigger, but and I hope that I'm wrong. I just don't know how it becomes different moving forward, because I've seen this before and nothing changes.
But you ain't you haven't seen this though, Travis. We've seen it here in LA where we've been, and we've seen it in other states where it has taken place, those conversations where there was been several people in Minnesota murdered over the last several years, but you've never seen all of these states, all of these white people rallying around, helping, being a part of it—that changes in itself. Okay, that's something. That ain't not nothing. That's something. When you look on in Huntington Beach, California, and you look and you see them protesting, but you also see the people that hate the fact that they protesting going up and trying to clash against them. You see it in Huntington Beach? We all know what Huntington Beach stands for. Like, come on. But you see it where in the past it's only been where we were at, and that was it, and that was all. But now it spreads. And as it spreads, that message gets out even more. So you can hope that it's going to change to a degree. It ain't going to be overnight. It ain't going to be overnight. It's going to be baby steps. It ain't going to be overnight.
All right, Ilze, you had a chance to speak with the head coach of the Chargers, Anthony Lynn, yesterday. I want to talk about that conversation and his response to the conversation as well. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.